morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Friday, December 16th. Today, our monthly deep dive into Colorado's rich musical tradition with Sun writer Kevin Simpson and longtime music reporter G. Brown, whose Colorado Music Experience website maintains a comprehensive collection of information, videos, and recordings of live Colorado shows spanning decades. Before we begin, want to help support visual journalism at the Colorado Sun? The Colorado Sun's photographer, Olivia Sun, is a Report for America core member. Report for America is a nonprofit organization which places talented emerging journalists into local newsrooms. To learn more, visit coloradosun.com/RFA. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this day, in 1918, Governor Julius Gunter signed a proclamation enacting prohibition in Colorado. After rejecting various ballot measures over the preceding 14 years, Coloradans had finally approved a full prohibition on the manufacture, sale, and consumption of alcohol. Pressure to ban alcohol built across the country in the late 19th century. Advocates argued that crime and domestic violence would decrease without beer, wine, and spirits. Anti-booze groups touted dry candidates, those who supported their efforts toward prohibition, over wets. Colorado's General Assembly adopted a law in 1907 permitting local governments to ban alcohol. Most agricultural areas approved prohibition, as did some cities, but booze still flowed freely in the mountain towns. In November 1914, voters approved a statewide alcohol ban to take effect on January 1, 1916. The General Assembly enacted laws to carry out the measure, including enforcement and restrictions on advertising. Denver saloon owners tried to exempt their city, but the state Supreme Court overruled a measure approved by Denver voters. When prohibition took effect in 1916, 17 breweries across the state shut down, and 1,800 saloons closed. In response, beer enthusiasts pushed for an exemption for their beverage, leading to a passage in November 1918 of a bone dry amendment banning all forms of alcohol, which Gunter approved the following month. Nationwide prohibition took effect in January 1919 and remained popular with state officials and voters alike. But the proliferation of speakeasies, bootlegging, and organized crime in the 1920s undermined prohibition, leading to its state and national repeal in 1933. Before we continue, a quick message. You can help the Colorado Sun receive a $5,000 matching grant. Now, through December 31st, the Sun will receive $5,000 in matching funds if it gains 42 new members for as little as $10 a month through the News Colorado Needs program. Visit coloradosun.com to join and learn more today. Next, our feature story.
Happy Friday, G. We've got the holiday season full upon us now, and the Denver Broncos season in free fall. And we've got a terrific anecdote from you around your introduction to reporting on the music industry. So lots to talk about, and thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Kevin, to be with my favorite Colorado Sun reporter. I'm not supposed to play favorites, but...
Well, for me, maybe one of the most entertaining parts of the holidays is the seasonal music that surfaces like clockwork before the Thanksgiving turkey's even cold, really. On radio stations, our own digital recordings, our vinyl or CD, it all comes out everywhere. And it seems like we all have our favorite turns by our contemporaries doing holiday songs. Springsteen's Santa Claus is Coming to Town jumps to mind as one fixture in that playlist. But I'm sure you've probably got some well-known holiday tune by a pop or rock artist. It's your favorite. What's bonus points here if there's a Colorado connection? But what do you like?
Well, I want to go for the bonus points. Absolutely, Kevin. Holiday music is such a subset of popular music in general. Everybody has made a Christmas album at this point in their careers, it seems. And I've always been a sucker for what the British do. For instance, over there, they take bets actually on what the number one song during the week of Christmas will be. It's been a longstanding tradition going on almost 50 years of everyone jockeying for position of what that is. And so there's all sorts of hilarity there as far as what acts are offering up Christmas songs from Bob the Builder, some kids show to the Spice Girls to whatever. It's just ridiculous. But that's a typical digression, Kevin. I want the bonus points of a Colorado collection, so I would be remiss if I did not bring up Colorado Christmas by the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. The members of the Dirt Band lived in Colorado for most of the 70s and into the 80s after having relocated from LA. And they wanted to put out a Christmas song, and they commissioned Steve Goodman, the fantastic singer-songwriter, to write a tune specifically for them. The fun part about it is that Steve was Jewish, and he balked, saying, "Why are you asking me?" And he acquiesced. He was one of our most gifted entertainers, and he came up with what I think is a classic Christmas song, not just for Colorado, but for the world.
Okay, let's hear a bit of Colorado Christmas.
And Santa drives a Rolls Royce limousine, but all along the Rockies you can feel it in the air until you ride to Boulder down below. Closest thing to heaven on this planet anywhere is a quiet Christmas morning in the Colorado snow.
So that's a classic in these parts, no doubt, but in the bigger picture, Why do you think artists gravitate to holiday music? Are those collections particularly profitable, or is a holiday album just kind of one of those boxes that some artists want to check off at some point in their career?
I think it's a combination of all of it, Kevin. Sometimes it's a contractual obligation to get out of a record deal. A real album, or people are genuinely moved by the holidays. The people that are interested in offering original material as opposed to the 100th reading, what am I, 100th? The millionth reading of Santa Claus is Coming to Town. You know, it's kind of a crapshoot there. One of my favorite stories involves Neil Diamond, who is known as the Brooklyn Cowboy, but he famously had a house up in Aspen that he spent all the holidays at throughout the 80s, 90s, and into the aughts. And he did a Christmas album. And Neil is of the Jewish faith. And I just asked him about his motivation. And he said, "I love Christmas. It's sexy." That's what Neil's got going for him.
Well, I'm going to say from my traditional standard, I go with Adam Sandler's The Hanukkah Song. No Colorado connection, but it never fails to lighten the mood. But, you know, there's also a lot of good but lesser known holiday song performances out there. I don't know how many of us own the Jethro Tull Christmas album, but it's a delight if your tastes run in that direction. What sort of unexpected holiday pleasure have you come across?
Well, I want to go, I think great minds think alike, Kevin. I think that Jethro Tull Christmas album is one of the greats, not just a great holiday album, but a great Tull album. If you're any sort of fan of Ian Anderson and company, you need to hear Ring Out Solstice Bells.
So we took a vote. We decided unanimously that the segment we're going to go with Jethro Tull. Have a listen. Wow, it's not exactly Aqualung, is it? But nice musicianship from a group that will forever be tied to Red Rocks lore, though that's a story for another podcast, right?
Maybe in June, Kevin.
Okay. Well, gee, you shared a story with me about your introduction to the music business a while back, but God, I love hearing it, and I think our listeners will get a kick out of it as well. Plus, it really underscores an important point about access, or now really lack of access, to musical acts in much the same way that I look back on my early career as a sports writer when access to even the biggest athletes was largely unfettered. You could talk to anybody. So take us back to that simpler time and tell us your origin story.
effects, Kevin. I detail it in this month's Colorado Music Experience newsletter. To jump ahead, to your point, yes, it's not the same world for music journalists, if music journalism even exists anymore. The idea that interviews are staged, the artists are coached to give short answers. There's no detailing the music. So you got 5 minutes on the phone. Don't ask them about rehab. It's not really much, really not that much fun. I got my start at the tender age of 15 years old. I grew up in Arvada and did some record reviews for the Arvada Citizen. Rode my bicycle down and Mark Wolf, a name that people might know. He was a wonderful writer for the Rocky Mountain News for many years.
And a heck of a pickup basketball player, too.
Yeah, he was 22 years old at the time, 7 years my senior. And gosh, my columns were horrible, but I think he liked having someone sit at the foot of his desk to hear him tell about how the Yardbirds played his senior prom back in Illinois or something. Anyway, I took my clippings back then. If you had clips, you were a writer, you were published. And I sent them off to RCA Records and got a chance to interview Burton Cummings of the Guess Who. The Guess Who were touring in support of the American Woman album with No Time and No Sugar Tonight, New Mother Nature. And I thought Burton Cummings was the greatest. I thought his voice was the most spectacular in rock. So there I am, 15 years old, with this opportunity, put on my 8th grade brown wool graduation suit with matching orange shirt and tie, and headed down to the Denver Coliseum and introduced myself, said I'm here for the interview. And looking back on it, I am certain that Burton Cummings must have taken the road manager aside and said, "Who the hell set this up?" But to his eternal credit, we sat down in the dressing room and he answered all my questions. I always put in the aside that he picked his toes during the entire interview. Not to disparage him, but it was an important lesson for me. I had yet to go to journalism school, or I was just a fan at that point, and realized that, you know, these guys are just human beings. Don't need to ask them about the situation in the Middle East. Just talk about music and get what's needed from them. And I just look back on that with such fondness and such gratitude, Kevin. At that age, if you're shut down in some endeavor, you're devastated. It just demolishes you. But if you're encouraged, you're on fire. And the fact that Burton took the time to talk to me, I said, this is pretty cool. I'm going to interview everybody. And Joe Walsh followed shortly thereafter. And with those two under my belt, I was kind of off to the races. I kind of did get to interview everybody. I've been a lucky and grateful boy ever since.
Well, we just happen to have a clip of the Guess Who. What are we going to hear, G?
Well, how about if we reverse engineer this? Since Burton Cummings was so gracious to offer me his time, let's play No Time.
What a voice. And it gave birth to a journalism career on top of everything else.
Much to his chagrin, I'm sure, if you ask me.
So let's finish up with some more seasonal music, but not the holiday season. The other season we're experiencing that isn't going so well, locally at least, is the pro football season. In the Colorado Music Experience newsletter, which I'm going to remind folks again, is easy to sign up for at colomusic.org, right at the bottom of the homepage. It's free. You do a real public service by offering a distraction from the Denver Broncos' forgettable football, although we might cut them a slight break for last Sunday's close call against the Chiefs. But your newsletter takes us through their memorable, or okay, maybe kind of forgettable, forays into pop music. And there are more of those than one might think at first glance.
Well, yeah, it's just something I've followed over the years. I'm hardwired to be a Broncos fan. Went to my first game back in 1964. So I've seen this bat of football before. trust back in the 60s, they were the dregs. But over the decades, various Denver Broncos traded their mouthpieces for microphones, I like to say. There was Melvin Bratton, a running back who in the early 80s was part of Two Live Crew's posse. Two Live Crew led by Luther Campbell. They had obscenity charges brought against their rap records, and Luther was kind of part of that scene, appeared in court in their defense and was seen on the records. Who else? Ray Crockett, the defensive back, sang on a track once. Trevor Price was very musical. The defensive lineman started his own Outlook Music operation here in Colorado and finished up his career with the Ravens, but kept things going. He's still making music soundtracks and things of that ilk. My personal favorite is Steve Herndon, an offensive lineman who grew up in Georgia with Bubba Sparks, the guy who had a hip-hop rap track called Ugly back in the early aughts. And Steve was front and center in the video that got all sorts of play on MTV. They had pickup trucks rolling like Escalades through the hood. With his foot stomp dance. So pretty funny stuff. But the ultimate one, Kevin, was John Keyworth. He was a CU buff in college, drafted in the sixth round by the Broncos, had a great career as a running back, and fancied himself a singer. And he made a song called Make Those Miracles Happen when the Broncos were on their way to the Super Bowl back in 1977.
Wow. Well, right now, even a single touchdown would be cause to fire up, make those miracles happen right now. But let's listen to a bit of the old 45 RPM version of the John Keyworth single, Crackles and All, from that 45, that might take us back to a happier place and play us off until next month.
Till some kind of miracle happens, and winners finally win. Gotta make those miracles happen. Make those miracles happen. Nobody, nobody does it alone. But if you're down and you wanna be up, you wanna drink from the window.
Wow, there you have it. I wanna remind our listeners before we let them go to that last minute holiday shopping that G has produced some remarkable work in book form called On Record, Year by Year of Music, not just in Colorado, but across the country, all genres. It's an amazing collection. And those two are available at colomusic.org. Make a great gift. I know I've already gifted them to folks in my family. They are just a terrific product. And with that, I'll just say thanks again for checking in with us this month, G, and have a great holiday season, and we'll see you next year.
Back at you, Kevin. I appreciate it very much.
Read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Denver's mayor is trying to avoid what he called a local humanitarian crisis. Mayor Michael Hancock enacted an emergency declaration Thursday to help with the influx of migrants to downtown. He said the city is opening more shelters, but resources are at a breaking point. The mayor said the city has spent nearly $1 million to aid the migrants and is asking the federal government for help. He also implored those in Congress to get serious about the border crisis. The public is encouraged to donate clothes and other necessities for the migrants. A Colorado Sun analysis of campaign spending shows Governor Jared Polis spent about half as much on his re-election campaign as he did 4 years ago to win the seat. Polis used $12.6 million of his own money this year, more than any other state-level candidate or group required to file campaign finance disclosures. Polis spent more than $23 million in 2018. Second on the spending list this year was Total Wine and More at $12 million. The money went towards supporting Proposition 124, an unsuccessful ballot measure that would have let the retail giant open more stores in Colorado. A case before the U.S. Supreme Court is threatening to upend Colorado's voter-approved system of drawing congressional district boundaries. Moore v. Harper hinges on the question of who has the ultimate authority when it comes to redistricting. Republican lawmakers in North Carolina argue it's the legislature and that nothing, not a state's constitution nor its judicial branch, can override that power. If justices side with the state lawmakers, Colorado's Congressional Redistricting Commission could be overruled by the legislature. The commission was created when voters in 2018 passed Amendment Y, the result of a bipartisan effort to limit politics and increase transparency in the map-drawing process. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again on Monday. Before we go, we encourage you to check out a new podcast from our friends at KUNC called The Colorado Dream. Here's a sneak peek.
The new season of The Colorado Dream explores the Black immigrant experience in Aurora. It's told through the eyes of one African woman.
I would sit on the beach and just daydream about coming to America.
And the city of Aurora that's working to become an inclusive home for all.
In the last 20 years, we have a new face of the city.
I'm Stephanie Daniel. Join me for the Colorado Dream Newcomers Welcome. You can find the series at KUNC.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, a quick message from our editor.
I'm Larry Rickman, editor and co-founder of The Colorado Sun. The Sun is a public benefit corporation, and we rely on the support of listeners and readers like you to produce the nonpartisan, in-depth news that Colorado needs and deserves. Please consider becoming a Sun member for just $5 a month. Learn more at coloradosun.com. Thanks.